Today, we continue our three-part series on aging. This time, we are looking at your finances. Yeah, how much money do you need in the bank depends on how long your life is going to last. We're going to learn more about life expectancy and finances today on Learning More. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. It is Russ with you. I thank you for joining us in this part three of our series on aging. Okay, so if you listen to the first two episodes, which I hope you did, we learned about Alzheimer's and dementia. We also learned about living beyond 100. And what is your life expectancy? Well, okay, that is a very good question for today, because your life expectancy will help you to come up with some sort of calculation where you can figure out how much you need to save for retirement. How much money can you spend once you're in retirement? And when do you need to start saving for retirement? I am talking with a person that has been researching this for 20 plus years. David Blanchett, thank you so much for joining us today on Learning More.
Great to be here.
And I mentioned that you did research. Why don't you tell us a little about exactly what you do?
Sure. So I'm the head of retirement research for PGIM. PGIM is the investment management group for Prudential. So I've been researching retirement related activities for 20 plus years. Used to be a financial planner, helping people and advisors figure out how to make better choices when it comes to saving and spending. Has kind of been my passion.
Awesome.
For the last two decades.
That's great. You know, that, and that is so helpful for this episode, because I came up with a little math problem after my last couple of shows here on aging. And, you know, if 65 is the retirement age, and let's say, you know, started working at 20, well, that's 45 years of savings. But now, because some people are living to 120, that's more than 45 years of spending. How do we plan for retirement when the time span is so unknown?
So it's really tough, right? And I think that you know, it's not just an individual you have to plan for. Typically, it's going to be a couple, right? So it's either member of that couple can live for a long time, and that's, and it's scary in that retirement is the most uncertain variable when it comes to figuring out how much you have to save. I mean, if you knew that you're going to live to age 97 or 110, that would make things a lot easier, figuring out how much you have to save when you retire. But the problem, right, is you could retire at 65 and live a year, or to your point, you could live 45 years. And so I think that what it does take is it takes a conservative assumption, you know, acknowledging there is this uncertainty here, but also an honest one. So thinking about, you know, what makes you unique in terms of things like health, in terms of activity, you have a decent estimate of how long that could be, acknowledging though that it could change a lot as you move through retirement.
Do you, I know a lot of people think about retirement, but do you see that a lot of people are thinking about life expectancy after retirement?
Sure. So there's a lot of surveys out there that ask people questions about, what do you think your life expectancy is going to be, or how long do you think you're going to live? And what you can do with it is you can actually look and see how accurate these responses are and what's related to these responses. And so there's this kind of larger question. Do people understand how long they're going to live? And the answer is kind of, okay? People aren't very good with numbers in terms of thinking about, you know, oh, will it be age 985? But they are good at certain things. So people do a very good job of internalizing their health on how long they're going to live. So, you know, people know that if they're healthy, they're going to live longer. But there's a lot of things that people just don't get at all. Like if you have higher income, you're going to live longer on average. This should not be a shocker, but if you smoke, you have a lower life expectancy. You actually don't see that at all when you look at the responses of individuals. They don't incorporate the fact that they're not going to live as long if you smoke. I think that like the key then is, you know, if you really, really understand how long you're going to live, is just, you know, go use an online tool. I think there's a lot of great tools out there. Almost all of them are free that can give you kind of an estimate of how long you should be thinking about planning retirement to last, given, you know, your unique health and everything else.
Okay, so we'll put a link to one of those calculators in the podcast description. I did one of the calculators, but I also feel like the other thing that I should look at is like, how long did my grandparents live? How long did my parents live? Right? Like kind of looking at it, like those kind of signals as well to sort of predict how long I'm going to live.
So when you have these online calculators, if they're any good, you know, they're going to, if they ask you one question, then if they ask you five questions, they're asking like the five most important questions that predict how long you're going to live. Like those things do matter, but less. But like there are some calculators that ask you like literally 40 or 50 questions. And so I think that you know, the problem is that a lot of people's perception of longevity is anecdotal. It's like, how long did my parents live, et cetera. I think that, you know, like the tools that you can use, like, so the one that I like is called the Longevity Illustrator. It gives you a good estimate by asking you five questions. Now, there are other tools that like they can ask you 20 questions. But I think that, you know, if you're using the right tools, they're asking you the questions that are the most important for the outcome. So if it's not in there, there's probably a reason, just in that it doesn't matter as much as the other stuff they're asking about.
Okay. So, I mean, you're using these bits of information, but nobody knows. We can't see the future. There's no crystal ball here.
Right.
And there's going to be problems. There's going to be issues that arise. When you're advising folks, like, what are the things that the common pitfalls that maybe they should plan for?
I mean, so first, like anything else in life, retirement is a journey. It's not fire and forget. You have to regularly revisit your scenario based upon how your situation evolves. And so what that means is, you know, maybe you started taking a certain amount from your portfolio when you retired. You kept doing that. You have to make sure that that's a reasonable number on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. You also have to ask yourself, you know, how have things changed with my health? How am I adapting throughout retirement? And, you know, what that leads to then is more gradual changes versus the last thing you want to have happen is that, you know, you start doing something at, say, age 63, you retire, you just keep doing it for 5 or 6 years. And then, you know, all of a sudden you come back and do a recheck and it requires a massive change, given maybe improvements in health expenses, maybe your portfolio is down. I think the key is just adapting and monitoring as you move along.
So hitting the retirement button doesn't mean you're not calculating anymore. You're still trying to figure this out. That can be difficult. I mean, and I'm not saying that's difficult because of aging. I'm saying that's just difficult for some people to try to figure out their finances. In those cases, do you like recommend, or just in general, do you recommend some sort of financial planner for this?
I do. I mean, so there is like one, like the super easy button is like my parents. Both my parents were public school teachers. They have a public pension. They get like all of their money from a public pension. So if you want an easy button,
right,
you just have all that you need in guaranteed income. And that could be Social Security. It could be an annuity, whatever else it is. That's the easy button. Because when you have guaranteed lifetime income, it's guaranteed income for life, right? In reality, though, most people, as they save for retirement today, are going to have money in an IRA or a 401k or a 403b. It's pooled savings. And that makes things a lot more tricky because you have your savings that have to last as long as you do. You know how long that is. And so I think that the more you're going to have to rely on that portfolio to fund your income needs, the more important it is to get that ongoing professional guidance. Now, a really good rule of thumb that you can use to figure out, you know, is my current strategy viable, is to go online, use a life expectancy calculator. And these are like, these range from like one question to like 50. And then, so let's say that it says you're going to live 25 years. Okay. If you just do 1 divided by that number, and let's say it's 1 divided by 25 is 4%. If you're taking out more than 4%, then maybe you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so to me, like, that's just a really rough rule of thumb that you can use to figure out how viable is my strategy from if you're depleting assets to fund your retirement.
You know, you'd said Social Security and sort of, you know, like these planned guaranteed things. Some people feel like maybe Social Security isn't as planned and guaranteed as it was at one point. Is that something that we should depend on?
So I think, you know, people have obviously very different perspectives on this. Okay. But I mean, here is my hot take. I think the odds of the US government cutting grandmom's fixed lifetime income source is pretty close to zero,
right?
I know that it's underfunded. I know that we're in this weird PAYGO situation, but if you look at what's happened historically, I think what's likely to happen in the future is that people who are currently receiving benefits will likely be unaffected, especially mass America. You know, maybe if you've got like a $5 million portfolio, they might add on some taxes. But I think it's pretty safe for most Americans when they enter that benefit payment stage. I think that, you know, it's younger Americans especially, they're likely to see bigger changes in their retirement benefits. But I mean, I'm 40 years old. I don't know when I'm going to retire. It will affect me, but it's not going to be as salient as someone who is retired. So I've never really heard anyone that has honestly talked about this thinking about cutting current benefits. I think it's the future benefits where it's likely to see some probably pretty significant changes.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. And I mean, you know, the thing is, it's I always feel like since, you know, the older population is generally the voters, like they're always guaranteed to vote. Like, that, I don't know if anything's going to happen.
you actually took my second point. Is I can guarantee you, if you cut grandma's social security check, that is not a viable political
strategy. Exactly. That is not a good decision to make. Okay, you mentioned you're 40. You don't know exactly when you're going to retire. Is 65, like, that's been kind of the standard age that we've talked about forever, right? It seems like 65, oh, that's the retirement age. Should that still be the retirement age?
So I think it's a good bogey, right? I think the, a problem, a big issue with retirement is that, like, the definition is changing. So, like, I don't know that I'll ever stop completely working. I want financial independence. I want to get to a point where if I don't want to work in finance, I want to go teach. I can do it. Mm-hmm. Right? I want to have complete freedom of my time. But a big problem, though, that does exist is that people's expectations of retirement in reality are very different. There's about a four-year gap on average between expected retirement and actual retirement. So the problem, right, is that, yes, as a country, as a society, we're all planning on retiring later, but typically when you don't hit your age, it's because bad things happen beforehand. You get laid off, you have a health event. And so I still think that 65 is an excellent proxy, or maybe even an earlier one, because the average person that says they retire at 65 retires at 63. Mm. And so I wouldn't, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, that we're going to have more individuals working longer in retirement. But to me, it's that gap that exists that scares me, because the number one thing that you can do to improve your retirement outcome is to just work longer, right? It gives you more years to save, another year to get Social Security benefits, another year for your assets to grow, all this stuff. The reverse is also true. And when you retire early, it can be really detrimental to retirement outcomes. So I think 65 is still an excellent ballpark. And I would honestly, you know, suggest, you know, listeners that are maybe even closer to retirement, maybe plan on an earlier age and kind of see what happens if it does end up being 62. Are you still going to be
gotcha.
Okay?
Yeah, that's wise. Okay. I feel like if I retired, I would be pretty bored, right? Like, I love to work. I love to, like, do different things. I'm always doing something in the office, right? I feel like I would love to keep doing that. But if, let's say, I'm working part-time, does that have any impact on other retirement income if I make that decision? Like, is that going to hurt myself financially by working?
I mean, I would say yes and no. Like, there's some nuances with if you claim Social Security benefits before what's called your full retirement age. But, you know, it sounds like you and I are similar in that I can't see myself retiring. I think that you know, the longer you can work, to me there's the financial benefits. There's also just the psychological and mental benefits. I mean, like, there's this expression, like, the day that you retire is the day that you start dying. And there's a lot of evidence this happens. Like, your mental acuity goes mm-hmm. down. Like, all a host of things can happen if you go from, you know, engaged activity to nothing. So I think that if for any other reason, just to stay busy, get a part-time job. Now there are little wrinkles that exist with that, but not anything that I think that most folks really have to worry about.
How much money do we need per year in retirement? That is like the number one question when I was looking this up. So I've got to ask it.
It's funny that, so I always make this point. So one of the first jobs I had out of college, as I worked at a company and I just did financial plans. So I was like, you know, like, financial advisors would get all this information and they would, we had this department. So, like, I was kind of like the data entry guy. Okay. And the one thing I've never forgotten is that there wasn't a single plan where the people had the exact same number, right? Everyone had a different number in terms of what they wanted when they retired. And I don't know why that surprised me, because I was young and foolish, but I think that is an important point. We all want something different, right? There are rules of thumb that we have that exist that can help you figure out how much you have to save, but everyone's number is unique. So like the one, like, most common rule of thumb is this thing called the 4% rule. Okay. And it actually, it's not named correctly. Okay. What you should focus on is ask yourself this question: how much will you get from Social Security? Okay. And what is the gap there? Okay. So let's say we're going to use round numbers here. You want $100,000 a year. You're going to get $50,000 from Social Security, married couple, delayed claiming. Okay. And then there's $50,000 left. Okay. Whatever that gap is, multiply that by like 20 or 25 times. Okay. So if it's $50,000 a year, you need probably about like $1 to $1.2 million saved to get that in retirement for a couple. If you want more safety, it's closer to like $1.5 million. But I think that those multiples are good starting places for most people, especially those that have a decent slug of their income from, you know, Social Security or some kind of like public or private pension.
Yeah, that actually makes me think about small business owners or those that are doing a side hustle or just contract work. Some people may not be putting money into Social Security.
Well, and so like, you know, if you're doing side hustles, like there's also not necessarily going to be benefits that you're saving for retirement. You might not be covered by a 401k plan. So I think that, you know, as we've transitioned more to kind of a gig economy, in a lot of instances, maybe you're getting money that it's not being reported to the government. You know, I think that it's just really important to be aware of what that means for saving for retirement. I think that, I mean, it is so easy for those of us that have company sponsored defined benefit plans to save. If you don't have that, you've got to go out on your own and figure out how much you should be saving and possibly based upon your method of compensation, if you're going to have lower benefits from Social Security because of that. So I think that there really are, and it's going to be, I think, a transformation in terms of how people plan for retirement in these more non-traditional jobs.
Okay, we've got plenty more to talk about here. When we come back, we are going to talk about real estate. Is that a good investment right now? Also, long-term care insurance, is that something that we should have right now? And also, when should we start thinking about retirement? We'll talk about that when we come back. If you enjoy history, maybe you're just feeling a little nostalgic, or you wonder who's having a birthday today, or maybe you need a reason to celebrate. Well, we've got the perfect podcast for you. It is called This Is Today. And each and every day, we talk about the historic events, celebrity birthdays. We also talk about whatever is going on today. There's always something to celebrate when you listen to This Is Today. And at just 10 minutes each day, you can make it a daily habit. You can even add it to your Alexa Flash briefing. Click the link in the description or just search in your favorite podcast app for This Is Today. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. Today, we are talking about finances and retirement. And this is our third episode on aging, the last in a series. If you missed the other two episodes, be sure to go check those out. Today, we are talking with David Blanchett. And I need to know, David, real estate, it seems like such a hot market right now. And it seems so unattainable for most at this point. Because of the crazy and kind of volatile market right now with real estate, is that something that you would advise people to jump into at this point to help them plan for retirement?
You know, so I have mixed feelings about that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, homes have not been, especially like homes that you live in, have not been phenomenal investments historically. So, I mean, everyone has to live somewhere. So like residential real estate or homes are novel in that it's both what you call an investment good and a consumption good. Okay. It's a consumption good because, you know, if you don't, unless you're going to move in with your parents and that just sounds awful, you're going to have to pay to live somewhere. You're going to rent or buy, right? So there's that kind of implied, you have to live somewhere and you're probably going to pay for it, but it can also go up in value. Right. Because everyone has to live somewhere. So like moving beyond your primary home, people might say, well, I want to get in the real estate market. And, you know, I think that the one thing that I would kind of caution there is that, you know, is that it's very cyclical and that, you know, I don't know that now is the right time to get in. Yeah. I just have so many friends right now that are having a terrible time trying to buy a home. And so what it suggests to me is that, you know, I don't know that we're in a bubble, but prices have gone up a lot. And so, I mean, they could keep going up. But, you know, you need to look at, you know, like the price to rents in your area. What are valuations? I know that interest rates are low, but I just have concerns about even investing in the stock market. You know, if you're not someone that can stick through the downturn, that, you know, if you don't have a lot of equity in the home, you see a correction like we saw in 2008, 2009, you can wipe out all your equity. You could be forced to sell when you're down and realize a loss. So I think it really is very situational. And maybe more risky than normal right now.
Okay, you said, and it was a laugh line there of living with your parents, but there's two sides to that. Let's talk about the kids, like kids that are like not going, they're staying with you, because you could have these other drains, I guess, on your income, right? Not just yourself. So if you have kids, do you have to plan differently for retirement or for aging?
I mean, potentially, right? I mean, in theory, you know, your kids can be both an asset and a liability from a pure financial perspective, right? So in theory, you know, they can be an asset of last resort, but like, you know, you could also deplete your savings taking care mm-hmm. of them. So I think that that's very much like a family situation. I think that, you know, speaking about homes, though, I think that the benefit of having a home and owning one is that it's often viewed as that kind of asset of last resort for retirees. Like most retirees, very few, less than 10%-ish, plan on actually using it to fund their retirement, but they're all kind of aware that it exists if they need to do something to have it there. So from my perspective, like a home is really viable as that kind of like backup asset, but the family stuff is obviously complicated based upon where they are in their life cycles. Do they have kids? How are they doing professionally and all that?
You know, we talked about in one of the other aging podcasts about the sandwich generation and how that's growing. The sandwich generation is you've got parents to take care of. You've got kids to take care of. That seems like, expensive. So what do you suggest to those in that sort of sandwich generation situation?
I mean, so what everyone will say is like the thing you should have is long-term care insurance, right? So, the costs associated with a nursing home or you know, assisted home care stay can just be incredibly expensive, mm-hmm. right? And in a perfect world, every your parents, your grandparents, whoever, they've planned for that. But stuff just happens, right? You just can't plan for all of it. And that helps defray the costs. But I mean, let's be honest here, like the premiums for long-term care have gone up significantly. A lot of folks that want it can't get it. And so like, that's just one of life's uncertainties that is so hard to deal with. I mean, I'm actually of the opinion, like we already have some form of public benefit in that capacity. If you qualify for Medicaid, it covers it. But I do wish there were better options for retirees, because a lot of times, to your point, it does fall on, you know, the kids who could be having to deal with their kids' tuition, saving for retirement to take care of that. And that could derail their retirement plan. Mm-hmm. So a lot of bad things can happen, which is why, you know, and you could retire early. And so there's all these reasons why, you know, I think that it's important to be pretty conservative in terms of your assumptions about when you're going to retire, because if you think about the things that can happen, usually things go wrong. And when they go wrong, it can go really wrong. And have a big impact on a lot of folks.
At what age do you suggest getting the long-term care insurance? Because I know it's super expensive, but at a certain point in your life, it does make sense. At what point is that?
I mean, I think there's no one right answer here. I mean, obviously, the younger that you look at it, you know, the better it is. So, you know, starting at 50 is better than 55, is better than 60. But, you know, the one thing that really worries me is the premium increases that we've seen historically in these policies. You know, you buy it at 50 and the premiums double or triple, and you've been paying these premiums for 20 or 30 years and haven't realized the benefit yet. And so like, of all the markets that have existed for insurance, like that's the one that's been fascinating in that the insurers, you know, underpriced the risk. And so there's this question, well, what if it's still underpriced? And what if, you know, like how long can you afford paying into a product and not have received a benefit because you're only 20 or 30 years into it, and you're getting it when you're 95 years old. So I think that it makes a ton of sense in theory. The practical stuff, given what we've seen with premiums and all that, have made it less than perfect for a lot of folks.
And then, you know, the other insurance, of course, is life insurance. There's the term life, whole life. Is there any recommendations that you have on what to do there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a lot easier. So for the vast majority of folks, term life insurance is the way to go.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's, you know, you buy life insurance to hedge against the possibility of dying. Right. So now it's not to say that whole life insurance can't work or can make sense, but here's the thing, for it to make sense for you, you have to have like literally maxed out every other way you could possibly save. So you've maxed out your 401k. You've maxed out an IRA. You don't want to save in a 529. You've already got, you know, like your house taken care of. You got all these other things taken care of. If you're looking for a way to save money for retirement and you like the idea of the tax advantage growth, it can make sense. I think it's really important that the vast majority of Americans don't need to do that. Now, again, for those that want that, it can make a lot of sense. But that's, again, typically super higher income folks.
Gotcha. Okay. Now I got to go back a little bit here because I wrote down also reverse mortgage. that's another option for folks. Is that I've heard mixed things about that. I've heard that it's fantastic, and I've heard that it's awful. So
well, it can be both. Okay. And I agree okay. with both of those perspectives. But I think, you know, the benefits, you know, there's different types of reverse mortgages. There's lines of credit. I think that's a way that an individual can harness equity in their home later in life, right? I think a lot of the benefits from opening like a line of credit have declined given some changes in the last few years. But I mean, you know, I don't know that a lot of people actively consider them. They don't. But I think if when you're at some point in retirement where you need money, you need a place to live, and you have equity in your home, that is a path worth considering.
Okay, so if somebody did want to do that and they wanted to seek information, is it a financial planner that they would go talk to?
So I would really, because there's a lot of fixed. So again, like I'm not trying to be negative on, like they make a ton of sense, but like getting get an hourly independent financial planner to give you a hot take on what you're trying to do. So don't, there's more of them today, and maybe you have a planner already. You know, but, you know, bringing someone in that's independent to just give you their perspective on this decision, that could be beneficial, especially if they're an independent fiduciary.
Okay. And okay. So now let's go way into the beginning here of the retirement. Way before you even think of retiring, like right in the beginning of your work career, or right, you know, hey, you're just out of college. At what point should you start thinking about retirement and planning for it?
I mean, so, you know, I think that the people today increasingly have other things that are kind of top of mind for them, like student loans. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, if you have a normal job at a company that has a 401k, right, that, you know, that, I mean, I guess I don't want to, normal on air quotes,
right.
You know, saving your 401k up to the match. Okay. The match is free money. You want to get that. Beyond that though, you know, other stuff might be more important for you, like paying off your student loans. Right. Saving to buy a house. I mean, you know, like I am a Vulcan when it comes to, you know, financial stuff, or at least I should be. But, you know, I am paying down my student loans and my wife's student loans faster than we probably should be, in that I'm paying off an interest rate that is lower than I expect to earn if I invest the money, because it makes me feel good.
Right.
OK, I think that the key with a lot of this is if you can, you want to become a good saver. And people become good savers in different ways. I think one way is to find the things that you're passionate about. And let's call a spade here. 25-year-olds don't care about saving for retirement, right? It's just 4 years away. And so, but if you can say, hey, you know what? I want to buy a house that's really important to me, and you're able to put money away that you might otherwise use on other things, that is, I don't care what rate of return you earn on that. That is a better use of your kind of thought on savings and saving for retirement, because it's making you become a better saver, right? You know, obviously, you know, pay off your credit card debt, but like, you know, after you've done those easy things, I think find the things that you're passionate about accumulating wealth for, and maybe focus on that more first. And then, you know, when you get into your 30s, you know, do more for retirement. But, you know, you know, it's not easy to tap a 401k for a down payment on a home. You can technically, you know, roll it to an IRA. But I think that, you know, focus on things that you care about first. And usually for most folks, that's not retirement.
How often, I guess, are you kind of re-looking at this? Are you just looking at it as major events happen, both like, you know, maybe internally, externally, like, you know, a health event for yourself, or external event like the pandemic? Like, you know, like, should that be a time when we all just take another look and see where we are and what we're doing? Or should this be just something that we look at on an annual basis, monthly basis, daily basis? Like, how often should we be looking at this?
I mean, I wouldn't say daily, right? I mean, I think that it never hurts to do a refresh and ask and understand where you are financially, right? I'd like to think you do it at least every year or two, but I think that it definitely is worth considering when you have life events. If you get a big raise, if you get married, you know, if you have kids, you know, there's questions you have to ask. And, you know, maybe you're just getting by and all of a sudden you're going to get a big raise at work. Let's just say, okay, well, you know, don't just go out and blow the money, you know, figure out, okay, I'm getting by just now. I'm going to have additional income coming up soon. How should I use that? I mean, obviously spend some of it, but maybe it is time to ask those questions. Well, maybe I need to get life insurance all of a sudden. Maybe I need to, you know, save to buy a house. I think those are the chances to kind of make better proactive decisions about your finances. Because you have the means to do so.
So, you know, investing is really, it's all about risk and reward, right? If you are starting this later in life, let's say you're you're 40. You have nothing saved up for retirement. Are you just trying to take riskier investments? Like, what are you trying to do in that case?
So I don't like the idea of risking on to kind of dig yourself out of a hole. You know, you can in theory, but the problem is if things go south, then you're even worse. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, what it takes, then it takes discipline, it takes sacrifice, and it takes saving. I mean, it's never too late to start saving for retirement, right? I mean, maybe it won't be what you envision it, but if you're 40 years old, you could easily have 20 to 30 years to save money. And a lot can happen between now and then. So I'd say that, you know, you have to do it at some point. The last thing you want to do is get to age 50 and wake up and say, I haven't saved for time, what I'm going to do. Because by then, it almost is too late. Like, you should still then start saving, but you've got to make radical changes then. Prepare yourself for retirement because you haven't been thinking about or really acting on it the last, you know, mm-hmm. 20 or 30 years.
At a certain point, they allow additional catch-up in your 401k or an IRA, right? What age is that? That's
at age 50. Yeah. Okay. At age 50, you can save an additional, call it $6,000 a year in 401ks and like $1,000. And I don't know the exact numbers, but there are what's called catch-up contributions for both accounts.
Gotcha. All right. So lottery tickets, I guess that's the way to go, right? That's
crypto. They're kind of the same thing right now. Yeah, actually. Right.
Well, actually, that's a great question. Crypto, like, is that an actual like legitimate thing that we should be putting our money in to save?
I'm an investment guy, and most investment guys, you know, no one was suggesting that you buy currencies beforehand, like physical currencies, like US dollar. There wasn't like talk about that. And so, like, it's not that crypto itself as an asset doesn't have value, right? But people didn't buy gold by and large or either. And so, like, and maybe they're going to crash, maybe they're not. I just don't have a way to value it. So I'm just really skeptical on allocating a lot of money to crypto. My brother-in-law loves to trade crypto, but it's just for fun. Mm-hmm. So like, as long as you cannot take it too seriously, that's okay. But it itself would not have been viewed as an investment, quote unquote, before recently. And to be honest, there's a pretty clear pattern when mass America or mass any population gets like super hot on any kind of like investment or strategy, it usually crashes afterwards. Right. It's not clear when that's going to happen, but that's been the trend historically. So, I mean, I don't, maybe it could go up another 50%, then go down 30%, but at some point we're due for a correction, most likely. There's just no telling when that's
going to happen. Actually, you know, I at the start of our interview, I was up 11% on some crypto that I have, and now I'm down 1.85%. So there's been almost a 13 point swing.
Right.
In the 30 minutes that we've been talking. So it's a bit volatile.
That's not normal for financial assets, right? I mean, so like in 2020, the markets went down like 10% in a day, mm-hmm. right? And that was like unheard of. But like, to your point, like crypto does that like in an hour. And so like, I think that's where it's pretty cool. There's a lot of speculation there. So again, it's not to say that there's no value in crypto. It's just, what is it worth? You know, that's where I have significant loss.
Yeah. As do I, but it is kind of fun.
It can be fun.
Okay. So if, you know, somebody's listening and they want to learn a little bit more from you, like, how can they do that?
So I have a website. It's not very good. It's davidandblanchett.com. That's where I post my research. I would say like I post a lot on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I think that's like the best channel for me because I can do it. It's easy. It's fast. Those are probably the two best ways to do it. And neither one of them are necessarily great.
Okay. So. Closing advice for somebody, if they're listening, what can they do today to help them later?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of financial advice, right? And I'm also a big fan of like of high quality financial advice. And the problem is that a lot of financial advisors are out there to sell you something. And so, you know, if you want to know how you're doing, you can try to figure it out yourself. There's a lot of great resources online. You know, there's a lot of tools online that are free that can get you most of the way there. Or you can hire someone to help you. I think that the key is understanding what you're good at. And then if you need help getting it, but get it from someone that's at a minimum, a certified financial planner, they're a fiduciary, they're doing the things to help you achieve better outcomes.
Awesome. David, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us learn more about retirement and finances.
Thanks for having me.
And we have some links that we discussed. We've got some articles that David has written as well in the podcast description and on our newly redesigned website, learningmorepodcast.com. So be sure to go check out those links to learn even more about this topic here. I thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you, and thank you for rating the podcast and sharing it with your friends. As with any podcast that gives opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. We encourage you consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. I invite you to also check out our daily podcast, and that is also linked in the podcast description there. It is called This Is Today, where you can learn the story of each day, including national events, daily history, and some fun stories. This Is Today is available wherever you get your podcasts. And as for learning more, well, we'll be back next week. Next Wednesday, we'll drop a new episode. We are talking next time about addiction. Yeah, we have a three-part series on addiction, and that starts with sex and pornography addiction as we talk with Tony Overbay. That will drop next week, so be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss it. Again, I thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.